In elementary school, I remember being on a school bus. We were going south down Granville Street, and we happened to stop at the traffic light right beside the Chevron gas station. And we looked outside the right side of the bus, and we saw this homeless man literally sleeping on the sidewalk, and he was in rags. The kids all moved to the side of the bus, and they all started waving at him in a very mean way. They were laughing. And they're looking at him like he's some kind of joke, like he's a spectacle. And one of the boys, he pulled out a bill of money, and he started waving it at the poor man. And when I saw that, I got really angry. I just hated the whole situation. I just couldn't believe how mean they were being to this poor man. I wonder how you feel about that when you hear it. Of course, you might feel, wow, that's wrong. But if you had actually been there, and if you had saw it, you might actually feel very angry. In 2011, there was a documentary called Bully, and it's following some kids bullying weaker kids, and two of the victims, they commit suicide. So I want you to just to see 1 minute of the trailer so you can get a sense of what's really going on.
The last couple of days, we had heard that Tyler had his head shoved into a wall locker. They said he's a geek.
My concern is that you were making someone feel so uncomfortable that they didn't want to be in school.
I feel kind of nervous going to school because I like learning, but I have trouble with making friends.
They said he's a geek. Some kids had told him that he's worthless to go hang himself. And I think he got to the point where enough was enough.
Tonight, a tragic situation.
A Perkins boy, just 11 years old, believed to have been desperate enough to take his own life.
This is an awfully complicated and difficult issue.
Kids will be kids, boys will be boys. They're just cruel at this age.
Here, what we get is nothing's wrong. We didn't do anything. Everything's fine.
They punch me, strangle me, take things from me. Sit on me.
Give it to him hard!
He's not safe on that bus.
I've been on that bus. They are just as good as gold.
And so when we see the injustice, that's when we start to feel the righteous anger. So those kids are in pain, and there's no excuse for the actions of those bullies. And then some of the administration and the parents are just totally clueless. The reason why the church stands up for life against abortion is because of the injustice. We've said before, the right to life is the foundational human right. Because if you don't have the right to life, no other right matters, right? The right to food, water, freedom doesn't really help you when you're dead. Now, the other reason why we always champion life against abortion is because abortion is the number one cause of death in the world. So according to Worldometers, this website, and it's not pro-life, Worldometers says that last year, 2019, there were 42 million abortions. That's the number one cause of death in the world. The second highest cause of death is by disease, and disease is 13 million. So 42 compared to 13. There's the injustice, and that's why the church is always fighting for human life. The first reading is from the book of the prophet Isaiah, and it's really interesting. In this reading, God is judging his people, and he's doing it with legal language. So look for the legal language. There's a summons, an indictment, probation, another indictment, and then finally a warning. And what we heard today in the first reading is part of the warning. God says, "Is this not the fast that I choose? To loose the bonds of injustice, to undo the thongs of the yoke, to let the oppressed go free and to break every yoke? Is it not to share your bread with the hungry and bring the homeless poor into your house? When you see the naked, to cover them and not hide yourself from your own kin." So what was happening here is that the Jewish people were fasting, and that's a good thing. But what they're actually doing is they're doing the right thing at the same time doing evil. They're doing injustice. They're actually attacking each other physically. They're quarreling. They're taking advantage of each other. And God's saying, you're doing the right thing. You're fasting. But if you're fasting and you're not loving like me, that's a perversion. God's saying, you got to fast, yes. But you also have to do the right thing. What does he want? He wants us to loose the bonds of injustice, to let the oppressed go free, to share your bread with the hungry, bring the homeless poor into your house, cover the naked, not abandon your fellow man. There is a famous Jewish theologian named Abraham Heschel, and a big part of his life's work was teaching people that according to the Bible, God relates to us with human feelings. God relates to us with human feelings. So whenever you read the prophets in the Old Testament, look for the language of emotion. So whenever God hears of injustice, he gets mad. He says, this is a disaster. He gets alarmed. And you know, Jesus, of course, had those kinds of emotions. Jesus got mad in the right way when people had a hard heart. When people changed the temple into a marketplace, he flipped tables. And today, we're listening to the prophet Isaiah, and we're thinking, yeah, we should have that same anger whenever we see injustice. Last year, I mentioned that babies feel pain at 20 weeks of gestation. So after conception, 20 weeks later, science tells us they can feel pain. Now, we are against all abortions, but wouldn't it be right, wouldn't it be at least humane to say, let's say in Canada, as soon as babies can feel pain, we should stop abortions after that? Wouldn't that just be kind of the logical thing to do? Last year I showed this chart of human fetal development from conception up to 9 months. In Canada, we can have an abortion anytime during this period. So even if the baby is fully formed and could survive outside his mother's womb, that baby has no human rights when it's in the mother's womb. Now let me show you another thing. Let's go to Levi. This is Levi Cholik. This is one of our parishioners. When he was a little baby inside his mother's womb. But Levi, he was born last year. Levi had no rights when he was in his mom's womb. Huh? Did everyone hear that right? Levi has no rights when he's in his mom's womb. So in 2017 in Canada, because babies have no legal rights in the womb, there were 94,000 abortions in 2017. So when do babies get human rights? There's this funny satirical video on YouTube. It's called The Magical Birth Canal. And the joke is that babies get human rights as soon as they pass through the magical birth canal. So they show, okay, you got a little baby inside the womb, no human rights. As soon as it goes through, human rights. No human rights, human rights, huh? What? So of course that doesn't make sense. Human rights come from the fact that we are human. The video about the magical birth canal was made by a woman named Laura Klassen. Laura Klassen is this Canadian woman who, when she was a little child, she saw pictures of an abortion. And she said, those images stuck with me because I realized how many babies were being killed. Other people have said this. Yeah, when I saw the images, that's when I started to feel it. And that's when I had to do something about it. When I was 19, my friend, Stephanie Gray, she would become my friend. Stephanie offered to show me some videos of abortion. And at the time I said, I'm not interested. I don't know. I said, I don't want to see it. And I recognized later, well, okay, that's a mistake. So a few months later, I had another opportunity to see it. And I said, yeah, okay, let me see it. And when I saw it, I saw the babies coming out all dismembered. They're in pieces, and they're all bloody. And that's when I knew, yeah, I'm totally against this, and I have to do something about it. A lot of people, we don't want to show these images because we don't want to upset people. But images of war, they upset people. Well, that doesn't mean we shouldn't show them. You remember years ago when they showed pictures of people smoking and what it does to your face? How it makes you really old really fast? Well, those images help people stop smoking because we're visual people. We start seeing these things and we think, no, I don't want this. And what is more disturbing? Is it more disturbing to see an image of an aborted baby, or is it more disturbing that babies are being aborted? Yes, it's the actual fact, not just the image. Question, what if people who have had abortions in the past see these photos and they feel terribly guilty? And the answer is we don't want to hurt people. And we always want to tell everyone, Every sin can be forgiven. That's something we all know in this church. Every sin can be forgiven, even sin of abortion. But when we see the photos, sometimes we might look at that and say, you know what? I've made a mistake. I need to go to confession. We repent, and that's a good thing. Again, what's more important? Is it more important the right to life or the right of someone not to be offended? Well, the right to life takes precedence. And at every Mass, we always have a graphic image, right, at Mass? When we look at the crucifix, so you have someone on the cross who's suffering and half naked, and he's in pain. And we have that image to remind us of how much God loves us, because the image communicates a lot. Millennials are now the most pro-life generation, in part because they see ultrasounds. They've seen the pictures, and we know the science. We know babies can feel pain. Back in September, I asked you a challenging question. I said, do you think we could get to the point in this church where we would be ready, where we could show these graphic abortion photos during Mass in a homily? I asked you to start thinking about it, maybe get ready. Because this keeps on happening, there are thousands of abortions every day, I feel as your priest more of an impetus. I think we got to do this pretty soon, but I'm holding back because I know some of you aren't ready for this. And you remember maybe a year ago, one of you told me, you said, Father Justin, you're holding back. I know you want to say more, but you don't say everything you're thinking. And I said, you're right, I am. And we all said that kind of self-censorship is wrong. Father Justin, you shouldn't censor yourself. So the question I'm putting out to you today is, given the fact that there are so many abortions, shouldn't we get ready? And I'd ask you to think about, well, when could we do it? When would you be ready? Because I just feel like I don't think we can wait much longer. We can't wait for forever. Okay, so how do we stop abortion? I want to give you three ways. First one is prayer. So abortion is a spiritual battle. And in places that have done this prayer vigil called 40 Days for Life, the results statistically have been 14,643 babies saved, 177 workers leave the abortion industry, and 96 abortion centers closed. That's worldwide. 3 years ago, when we started the 40 Days for Life campaign, just this prayerful vigil, we took one day, and we had 120 people sign up. And then the year after that, we took two full days, and we had 220 people sign up. And then last year, we decided, let's take 4 days, and we had 307 people sign up, each person signing up for an hour. So this year, we want to keep on growing. We want to take 5 days. And I want to invite everyone to participate. This is going to be after Ash Wednesday. So Thursday, February 27th to Monday, March 2nd, the end of February. You can see it's just a peaceful prayer vigil, no confrontation. And this year, because we're always trying to up our game, this year what we want to do is see, if you've taken 1 hour before, have you thought about maybe taking a multiple? We try to grow. And maybe we'll want to add fasting this year as a sign of our sincerity. How much do we want it? We'll fast to receive this great gift. This might be the best Lenten penance you do. In your pews, we've got the cards. Could I ask you to pass those down to each other, please? Now, these sign-up cards, there is no pressure. I just want you to look at what we are offering. The sign-up cards, if you choose to sign up, all you have to do is write down your name, your phone number, and the date and time you want to participate. Again, you don't have to decide right now. Just think about it. We have a few more weeks of this before we kick off. And if you do choose to sign up, thank you so much. You can fold it, put it in the collection basket. Okay, number two. The second way to stop abortion would be to share what we believe. Okay, Canada's a free society. We're allowed to share what we think, and it's a good thing. So one thing we can do is talk to people we know about abortion. There's nothing wrong with that. And we can share what we think. You could actually send articles, pictures. And I want to show you just a 5-minute video about the argument for abortion. It's not a perfect video, not a perfect moral argument, but it's a pretty good one. And this is something we could share.
Let's talk about one of the most emotionally charged subjects there is, abortion. but in an unemotional way. Also, let's not touch on the question that most preoccupies discussion of the subject, whether abortion should be legal or illegal. The only question here is the moral one. Is ending the life of a human fetus moral? Let's begin with this question. Does the human fetus have any value and any rights? Now, it's a scientific fact that a human fetus is human life. Those who argue that the human fetus has no rights say that a fetus is not a person. But even if you believe that, it doesn't mean the fetus has no intrinsic value or no rights. There are many living beings that are not persons that have both value and rights. Dogs and other animals, for example. And that's moral argument number one. A living being doesn't have to be a person in order to have intrinsic moral value and rights. When challenged with this argument, people usually change the subject to the rights of the mother, meaning the right of a mother to end her fetus's life under any circumstance, for any reason, and at any time in her pregnancy. Is that moral? It is only if we believe that the human fetus has no intrinsic worth. But in most cases, nearly everyone believes that the human fetus has essentially infinite worth and an almost absolute right to live. When? When a pregnant woman wants to give birth. Then society and its laws regard the fetus as so valuable that if someone were to kill that fetus, that person could be prosecuted for homicide. Only if a pregnant woman doesn't want to give birth do many people regard the fetus as worthless. Now, does that make sense? It doesn't seem to. Either a human fetus has worth, or it doesn't. And this is moral argument number two. On what moral grounds does the mother alone decide a fetus's worth? We certainly don't do that with regard to a newborn child. It is society, not the mother or the father, that determines whether a newborn child has worth and a right to live. So the question is, why should that be different before the human being is born? Why does one person, a mother, get to determine whether that being has any right to live? People respond by saying that a woman has the right to control her body. Now, that is entirely correct. The problem here, however, is that the fetus is not her body. It is in her body. It is a separate body. And that's moral argument number three. No one ever asks a pregnant woman, "How's your body?" when asking about the fetus. People ask, "How's the baby?" Moral argument number four. Virtually everyone agrees that the moment the baby comes out of the womb, killing the baby is murder. But deliberately killing it a few months before birth is considered no more morally problematic than extracting a tooth. How does that make sense? And finally, moral argument number five. Aren't there instances in which just about everyone, even among those who are pro-choice, would acknowledge that an abortion might not be moral? For example, would it be moral to abort a female fetus solely because the mother prefers boys to girls, as has happened millions of times in China and elsewhere? And one more example. Let's say science develops a method of determining whether a child in the womb is gay or straight. Would it be moral to kill a gay fetus because the mother didn't want a gay child? People may offer practical reasons not to criminalize all abortions. People may differ about when personhood begins and about the morality of abortion after rape or incest. But with regard to the vast majority of abortions, those of healthy women aborting a healthy fetus, let's be clear. Most of these abortions just aren't moral. Good societies can survive people doing immoral things. But a good society cannot survive if it calls immoral things moral. I'm Dennis Prager. To subscribe to our YouTube channel, click here. To help keep our videos free, donate here.
Number three, third way to stop abortion. People are pro-choice. So let's present them with the three choices when someone is pregnant. Keep the child, adoption, or abortion. The woman I told you about, Laura Klassens, not only does she work to stop abortions, she tries to help women who are in crisis pregnancies. So on her website, she writes to women in a pregnancy, "You may be feeling shocked, scared, excited. We are here to support you. Don't rush into making your decision. It's your choice, but know that you are making a choice for two." She shows the facts of pregnancy. She shows what babies look like. She reminds women they're not alone. And she gives them a list of pregnancy centers all across Canada. She reminds pregnant women they are strong enough to care for their child. And if they feel they aren't, then giving the child up for adoption would give another family an opportunity to have a child. The example of Laura Klassen, it inspires us, especially families, and in a particular way, men, always to support a woman if she's in a crisis pregnancy. We all wish we could stop injustice, bullying, disease. I've just given us three ways we can stop the number one cause of death in the world. The first reading says that the people of Israel were being judged for doing evil, but the beautiful part about the ending is it doesn't end with a guilty verdict. It ends with an announcement of salvation because the Jewish people changed. So let's change too, because God feels angry at injustice.